Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hello, I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio is going to announce a contract with America today, a progressive contract with America. But there's some stuff missing, especially as it relates to black folks. We'll break it down for you. President Barack Obama decides where he's going to build his presidential library. Shocker! It's in Chicago. Also, he fought for paternity leave and won. Author Josh Leves is fighting for all fathers in his new book, All In, and the musical trio, the Ballard Brothers. Ooh, fought against apartheid to become the most adored singers in South Africa, and we'll talk to them later in the show. And the president of the Piney Woods Boarding School is here to talk about the school's efforts to raise money for deserving students. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Mayor Bill de Blasio will unveil what is called a progressive contract with America. You might remember a number of years ago, the Republicans, they announced this big contract with America led by then Speaker of the House, Duke Gingrich. Well, de Blasio's plan is a 13-point plan. It includes universal pre-kindergarten, paid family leave, $15 minimum wage, higher taxes on the wealthy, union-friendly labor laws, opposition to union and fair trade deals, comprehensive immigration reform. So what the hell is missing? Do you see anything in this plan that deals with police brutality? Do you see anything in this plan that deals with schools not jailed? Do you see anything in this progressive contract with America that deals with mass incarceration? No. So exactly what is the problem? And why is it that white progressives somehow can't focus on those issues, yet somehow want to present, as Rashad Robinson of ColorChange.org, present these nice sort of race-neutral policies that they want black folks to get behind? Let's talk about it with Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver of Insight Unlimited, Jay Walker, Prince George's County, Maryland delegate, and also Kenra Rankin-Nassau, author and journalist. Avis, I want to start with you. This is I had Rashad on the Tom Jones Morning Show yesterday. Van Jones and Vangelis and others, they have been pressing de Blasio saying, look, how can you present this plan that's supposed to be progressive, that's supposed to be sort of this defining document, if you will, where he wants to sort of drive this progressive movement from a guy who got into office because of his opposition to stop and frisk, yet no mention of mass incarceration, no mention of schools. It is as if, you know what, that's okay.
The sad reality is this is progressive. I mean, that is progressive in America today. Progressive is very whitewashed. When have they ever, frankly, focused on issues that specifically address the conditions of the black community? Few and far between. So the sad reality is I'm not surprised about the points that he's included in his contract with America or on America or whatever you want to call it. The reality is, as has become the norm, as relates to progressive leaders, they conveniently forget about black folks until they're begging us for our votes.
And look, Jay, if you're African American, you're watching this show, if you're a mother, if you're a single woman, if you're a father, doesn't matter. Yes, you're going to say universal pre-care, family leave, minimum wage, high taxes on wealthy, but you begin to break it down, immigration reform targeting Hispanic community. When you begin to talk about opposition to unfair trade deals, targeting labor right there as well. When you begin to talk about this whole issue of paid family leave, that's really targeting women there. And you have had folks saying, how in the world can you leave out what is the defining issue right now, where you literally have Republicans and Democrats who are uniting saying we must do something about mass incarceration, and it is not in a so-called progressive contract with America?
Well, I think it tells you where the priorities are. You know, you listen to something with a catchy title, sounds great. I mean, we love No Child Left Behind. And as a political leader, our key was, where's the funding for No Child Left Behind? You talk about contract with America, well, you're defining what America is, but you're leaving out so many other things that need to be addressed. I think one of the things we're seeing right now are a lot of social issues. We've got social divide within the African-American community. There's starting to become a social divide between the Hispanic community with regards to immigration policy. I think this was very softly put, but give credit where credit is due. I do believe universal pre-K is something that will tremendously help the African-American community if we're looking for something to give him credit for. But I'm always looking for, I want to get away from the catchy title. Let's get down to the bare bones of it all.
Kenra, I'm not interested in giving him credit. I'm not. Not when he ran for mayor, the leading candidate was a white female lesbian. The second candidate was a black male. He was really sort of like the third candidate. It was his position on Stop and Frisk. It was the use of his son, Dante, in commercials. It was having a black wife, all of that. And so here it was his really position dealing with the police, dealing with the issue of criminal justice that vaulted him over those two and interest groups who said, you know what, we're gonna bypass a lesbian, bypass an African American, and we're gonna vote for this white guy to be mayor of New York. And again, he is positioning himself as sort of this spokesman of this progressive movement. You've got Senator Elizabeth Warren as well. You got, of course, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who's running for president. But to not address what is a fundamental issue that deals with income inequality, that deals with jobs, that deals with education, that is mass incarceration. This, to me, I'm sorry, you can have the rest of this. That leaving that out negates all of this.
Yeah, you know, I think it's as we've said, there's nothing surprising about this. We are in fashion when we are politically convenient, and I think that when he was running, as you said, that's what played in New York. And I'm thinking that his thinking is probably that doesn't play across the country. It doesn't play in Peoria. Folks don't necessarily care about the plight of black folks unless it works for them. And so for him to, you know, as you said, he has issues that target the immigrant community and that target women, but we don't matter in that context.
But this is
not
the problem.
He thinks it's going to put him over.
Well, this is the problem here when you look at the issue of mass incarceration. You're seeing lots of white folks in the
Absolutely.
South who are being impacted when it comes to meth, who by drug policy as well. Samuel Jarecki's documentary, The House I Live In, deals with that as well. And again, here's what's interesting. So in this case, so there were African-Americans who were involved. And so what folks have told me is his deal was like, well, you guys should have brought it up. No. I don't need to have some black folks have to bring some stuff up for y'all to pay attention to why this is an issue. And how about this, Mayor de Blasio? Look outside your damn window.
Right.
When you see thousands upon thousands of folks going to the streets protesting all across America, I'm just saying, have you been paying attention for the last 9 months?
Wow.
I think, you know, it comes down to, is he a one-trick pony? And it sounds like, you know, one-trick pony is the only one issue. He tried to be broad. And you know, let's be honest, you can always bring education around everything. You talk about minimum wage. If you're talking about paying people more money, then obviously that helps those minorities that are in your jurisdiction. So I think, in this case, it's broad. Is he missing some things right now? I think it's a matter of, is he missing the current hot topic right now, which I can tell got you fired up.
And the reason it's got me fired up, Jay, is because, again, you have Republicans who have all of a sudden woken up and said, wait a minute, we are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars throwing folks in prison. You know what? This really is not working. And when you look at the number of people, we have more people in American prisons than anywhere else, and this is a so-called progressive agenda?
Yeah, Ron Paul is more progressive than Bill de Blasio, apparently. Right. But what's very interesting here to me is that it's not just the fact that he's trying to make something that's going to play broadly to America, because he has comprehensive immigration reform in there. That's not necessarily broadly embraced by America. And when you look at the voting turnout, let's be very real here. When you look at the voting turnout of the black community versus the Hispanic community, come on, we're like easily triple their voting turnout. So if you're going to look at individuals that support you on a regular basis and then ignore them blatantly like this, it makes me wonder, do you really want our vote? Do you really deserve our vote?
Hold tight 1 second. When we come back, I want to deal more with this, but I want to specifically talk about this whole issue of whether or not black folks are going to have the courage, have the guts to actually chin check white progressives. Yeah, we're going to talk about that up next. Also, New York and Hawaii lose out to the south side of Chicago as the feature home of President Barack Obama's presidential library. Also, a clear-cut case of racial profiling is caught on camera in Colorado. We'll talk about the ACLU suit on behalf of two African-American men. And it's 9 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News 1 Now. 13 minutes after the hour, we want to go back to our panel. I raised this point before, and it speaks to me a level of honesty and accountability as to whether or not African Americans who will vote at a higher rate than anybody else. And let's and for people listening, do understand, black women voted at a higher rate in 2008 and 2012 than any other group in America. Mm-hmm. Black women, period. Yeah. More than white men, white women, Hispanics, Asians, you name it. This to me is an example of where African Americans are going to have to stop being silent and impotent when various initiatives are put forth and why progressives are expecting black support, and then they don't come through in a convincing manner, and then expect us to go, well, we'll get to it later, you need to come along. No, my deal is, if I believe that mass incarceration is a fundamental issue, and then de Blasio does not have this contract with America, I'm not showing up today.
Exactly.
And I'll make it perfectly clear to him, I won't back any of this stuff. I think the angle always for white progressives is, well, y'all going to back all the rest of this stuff, and we might get to that later, or we'll consider putting it in.
It's the back of the bus treatment once again.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get very real about this. We're being disrespected yet again by people who claim to be our friends when they're begging us for our votes. The reality is, if he really cared about producing a contract for America, it would have included in there. It would have included in there reflexively. He would have looked at things like the school-to-prison pipeline. He would have looked at things like making sure that police brutality is really examined and information is put in there that really addresses that. None of that is in here. It's completely disrespectful.
It is disrespectful, and you know, like you said, it is. It's, again, we're being told, you know, we can wait, we can get ours later. And what it's going to have to come down to is making it a deal breaker. It has to be, you know, not a we'll wait and you'll get it done, but it has to be a, you know what, we're not going to go this. We're going to run our own candidates. We're going to support the candidates who really are on board with the issues that we, you know, care about.
The reason I'm pushing this, Jay, is because from a political standpoint, when where we stand all across this country, there are going to be fundamental policy issues that we have to address on the city council level, county commissioners, the state level, and also on the federal level. And so here you have African Americans out there in Baltimore protesting. We saw it in Ferguson. And so now I'll bring up Ferguson for a perfect example. As a Democratic governor in Missouri.
Yeah.
Jay Nixon, mm-hmm. who the president praised for his reaction. So the question is Governor Jay Nixon going to get behind legislative changes to fix a lot of stuff that we saw that took place in Ferguson? The same thing in other places as well. You see in Cleveland, that's a Democratic mayor. Tamir Rice's case. Mm-hmm. I could go down the line. So I think what happens is when we have this target of Republicans, oh, all of a sudden it's, oh man, oh, we can go all in, but it's a white Democrat. I'm not quite sure, you know, how we want to respond. And I'm saying, what's more important, the D or the issue?
Definitely the issue. I mean, you know, so often, let's be honest. I mean, the African-American vote is taken for granted. You know, look at the state of Maryland where I represent right now. We have a Republican governor, and we have more Democratic voters here, and the leading largest county for Democratic votes is Prince George's County.
Well, actually, Ben Jealous says that Maryland is really the blackest state outside of Mississippi.
Yeah, and we are. But yet, we have a Republican governor right now. See, so what happens is when you don't get out there and vote, and I think you were talking about earlier, if you don't get involved in the process, that's why there's no reason why Ferguson shouldn't have had more elected officials there in office there to deal with some of the issues.
Okay, but I got to ask you this here.
Sure.
We had our Baltimore special last week. Faraji Muhammad said there were 17 police accountability bills, something along dealing with that and criminal justice that were put forth, not one passed. Mm. There were 17.
Yeah.
All those Democrats there.
Yeah.
17, not one passed.
Yeah.
It's not about the D, it's about the issue.
Yep, you know,
we're a Democratic state, so I think you have to sit there and you have to say, well, it's not a matter of all Democrats are for this, because you have some Democrats that are tough on crime, some Democrats that are a little bit more lenient, some Democrats that are heavy law enforcement, some that are on the fence. I'm about the issue there. I think body camera is a nationwide trend. The federal government's starting to put money in for body cameras throughout the whole country. So you can talk about, hey, why doesn't everybody have body cameras? Well, do you want to take money from education and educating our kids to pay for body cameras, or do you wait for a program to be instilled from the federal government, which will help ease the pain a little bit for state and local budgets?
Here's the thing. We don't have permanent friends. We shouldn't have permanent enemies. We should have permanent interests. And I don't care if a D precedes your name or an R precedes your name. You're not going to get my support unless you are right on the issues that are important to me. This is not right. This does not deserve our support. And he should be publicly called out on this.
Well, and the thing, just beyond this issue, I think there's a clear reason why schools are not mentioned in his deal, because he's catching much hell there fighting over the issue of school choice and charters, even though you have thousands of parents, a number of them African-American, who are saying, this school over here sucks. I am not sending my kid here, but the mayor, he wants to stop the expansion of charter schools, and you got black parents who are saying, this school sucks, this school over here is doing well, I want my kid to be able to go here. And again, it's one of those things there where you see white progressives who are very much against school choice, which I fundamentally believe in, and they're talking about, well, let's fix the education system. I'm going, okay, fine. When are you going to do that? Because if you're a black parent, you're not waiting on somebody else. You're going, hold up. When your eight-year plan is done, my fourth grader will be graduating from high school.
Yeah, you know, and I see eye to eye with you on that one. You know, I always present this challenge to those people that say they don't like school choice. I say, well, you tell me, what do I tell a mother in my district whose neighborhood is infested by gangs and she can't afford to send them to a private school because she didn't have the income, because maybe that's why she lives where she lives, or caught a couple tough breaks, and yet she has to sit, we're forcing her to send her kid to that school that's riddled with gangs, or could be riddled with drugs, things of that nature. Where's the alternative in terms of education? So it's not the most popular thing that I get out there for, but I believe in it wholeheartedly. And I think it's something where a lot of people have to realize, and you mentioned the white liberals compared to, there's African-American divide on this. Some are saying it's got to be public school all the way. Others are saying we want the choice program.
Guess what? Many of them saying white liberals, they kids ain't in public school.
Mm-hmm. Give it to me.
Let's just cut to the chase. So I love the people who want to fight for public schools, but they kids don't go to public schools.
People who have choice afford to use the choice.
Exactly.
I mean, even if it's just buying your home in a place that specifically districts to the school that you want your child to go to.
Precisely. But again, though, I think what we have to do is make a decision whether or not we're going to keep playing this game of back in the D, or going to say, you know what? I'm sorry, I'm not going along with that crap. And you're going to have to speak to what our issues are if we're going to pay attention to you. Folks, we come back. More cops going wild on the video. This time they're caught pulling over two black men for doing nothing in Colorado. Shocking, really? Also, in his new book, Josh Leves argues that dads deserve more respect than they currently get. I agree with that. Show dads some respect, damn it. And when apartheid was going strong, the Bala brothers were going even stronger. We have their amazing story. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Roland S. Martin, or go to News 1 or our News 1 Facebook page. 21 after the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
What's the reason why you pulled us over, officer? I'm recording this. Police officers pulled us over for no reason. I got this on camera.
Do you have your ID?
I have my camera. I have my ID, and I'm recording this. Just to let you know.
I'd like you to pass me your ID, please, and keep your hands where I can see.
Am I under arrest? You failed to identify yourself, so I don't know who you are.
Well, sir, you know I'm a police officer with the city of Colorado Springs.
You failed to identify yourself.
He would not cooperate. I just need your ID now.
You failed to identify yourself. My hands are visible. I have the recorder recording. My brother is being put in handcuffs. We're pulled over for no reason. He still had not identified why he's pulled us over. Now I'm being perceived as a threat.
The man you see in the video is Ryan Brown. His brother, Benjamin Brown, was pulled from the car with a taser gun pointed at him by Colorado Springs police officers during a supposedly routine traffic stop. The ACLU of Colorado has taken up the Brown brothers' case, citing they were handcuffed, searched, then detained without reason or fault. Go back to our panel, Avis Jones DeWeaver, Jay Walker, and Kimroy Rankin-Nassau. Here's what, again, this is why... First of all, it's ridiculous that if you're African American, you have to actually take the time to have your phone with you at all times and click record. But it's another example, though, and I think we're going to see more and more of these cases, more and more of these examples, where people are saying, we're going to record all these police actions. And for all those people out there, all those law enforcement lovers who have been lying to themselves, who have been saying the rest of us are crazy with these examples, they are going to, this is going to actually become, I think, a daily television show.
Yeah.
Where literally it's, and so I wouldn't be shocked if somebody creates a show, Cops Gone Wild. Forget the first 48, forget Cops, whatever, but Cops Gone Wild, because we're seeing more of this now.
Yeah. And what's really, you know, what's interesting to me, ACLU actually has an app now for that, where you can videotape your interaction with the cops, and if they try to take your camera from you, your phone from you, you just hit send, and it automatically goes straight to the ACLU. So they are preparing. And with technology, we're beginning to have the opportunity to fight back. But the reality is that, until people have some repercussions, police face repercussions because of their behavior, this will continue to go on.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I keep saying you're going to have to discipline or fire cops in order for them to go, we might want to change how we act.
Right.
About accountability. You know, and we always said that. I've said on this show before, I believe in accountability. But one of the things that, you know, as I'm sitting here listening, I'm conflicting a little bit, because I think we have to go back to, you know, my mom and dad told me growing up in a city environment, look here, when you get pulled over by a cop driving your car, they had to teach you, this is the protocol, this is what you need to do. And we're going to have to go back to protocol teaching. We thought that era was over with. My mom and dad had to teach me, hey, get a badge number, and then write down that it turned out that you had some cops that were doing wrong. I think in this case now, you've got the social media where everybody's trying to record everything right away, but you're going to have to go back to the type of protocol that you have to have with law enforcement when they come along.
We're not going to push back on that. Because we have seen Philadelphia case, we showed the video, two brothers walking down the street. Cop says, why are you speaking to that guy back there? They said, we were saying hello. And the cop says, well, why were you speaking to him? The guy said, we were saying good morning. What's the big deal? Cops jumps out, throws the bullets up against the car, searches them, handcuffs them. They're recording the whole deal. I get your point, but here's the other thing that I hear from African Americans, and I understand. Black man asks the cop, I want your badge number. That is perceived as, oh, you're now being disrespectful, but also you being aggressive. So that worked for white folks. I mean, a white boy can say, I need your badge number. An African American says that, that actually, in my mind, can escalate the conversation.
It can. And I think that's why you need to train on how you do it. Does it make it right? No.
No, but is there bad policing?
Okay. Let me give you this part.
Should the cops get training?
Well, clearly the cops should get training, too. And anytime you're dealing with cultural differences, you're going to have a little conflict. I mean, next year you're going to start seeing it. For years we heard about with Hispanics that did not speak English. They would misinterpret what was being told and run and get locked up.
The cops beat down a deaf guy.
I don't care if it's law enforcement, if you're just out there on the street. A person that has a gun and you don't is in a position of power.
I understand.
To talk back, I don't think it's a smart thing to do. I think to sit back and say, okay, hey, I'm in a tough situation right now, try and get through it, and you live to fight another day. I totally agree,
but here's my whole point. My point, though, is that when that is the default, it continues.
Right, there's no accountability.
There's no accountability.
Yeah. I don't interpret that as talking back.
Me either.
He had every right to know the name of the police officer. He had every right to record the conversation and the interaction. If nothing wrong was going on, the police officer should have no problem with being recorded if he's acting in the correct manner.
And he asked.
There's nothing out of bounds here.
Right. He asked all the correct questions. He asked, you know, why are we being pulled over? Yeah. What is your badge number? What is your name? Those are all things that are completely within his rights to ask. He wasn't disrespectful when he did it. He had his hands up every time he told him to put his hands up. He opened the door when he told him to put his. There was nothing. Protocol can't carry you where bad policing brings you in. You know what I mean? All you can do is do exactly what he did. He tried to get it on video and put it out there.
There's bad policing going on here, and I'm not saying that the officers were right at all. But I'm saying that. And now we have youngsters out there, they want to record everything. Don't worry so much about recording something rather than follow the instruction that you're given. Please come out.
To me, you got to record it.
Record it, but when you're told to get out of the car,
he
step
did.
out out of the car while you're recording. It seemed like there was a pause.
No, it's not.
Hold on. Why are you telling me to get out of the car?
Why are you pulling me out of the car?
Why are you telling me to get out of the car? But earlier, before he asked him to get out of the car, pulling on him is wrong. All that you see right there, that's wrong.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though. Here's the deal, though.
Into the dirt,
but here's the deal,
that's wrong.
Here's the deal, though. But if he is not recording this,
we don't
see it.
Exactly.
If he is not recording this,
yes.
We don't know any of this took place. The point.
And if
he is not recording this, then society says the cop wrote it in his report.
Yes.
His word is right.
Yep.
You lying. And so to me, that's why you got no choice.
Yeah. Yep.
I say you record it, but you have to record within your limits. I think if you're going to do these type of things, you have to do about, don't rush for a cell phone because you don't want somebody to say, oh, he was reaching for a weapon.
No, that's not my point. Don't rush. The moment you get pulled over, this is what you do.
Yeah.
You go.
And follow instruction. No, you must follow instruction.
And you got to hand
the moment, the moment, wait, when the cop's coming up, this is what you do.
What do you do when he says, put your hands down? What do you do?
Easy.
You say,
I'm going to have my hands up. Phone up, hands up.
Okay.
Yep.
Follow instructions.
Right. No, but here's the deal, though. But what if the cop tells you to stop videotaping?
Yeah, well, you have a right to keep taping.
Yeah, but if I stop videotaping and get my ass whooped, then we got a problem.
That's when you send it to the ACLU through their app.
And then that's when your TV show comes out that you were talking about, they're going to start having cops going wild.
No, right, but the deal is, but if I don't videotape, all of a sudden I'm getting beat, and then now it's his word, my word, and we know in this society, they're going to believe the cop.
Yep.
Before they believe anybody else, gonna say, "Oh, you're a black man, you're a thug." That's what they gonna do.
Yeah, that's how you can shock to death a woman who has her hands bound, her feet bound, a mask on, and end up having that called an accident.
And there's tape, and that still just hasn't been released.
Exactly.
How many months later?
There you go. All right, folks, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Coming up, author Josh Levs outlines steps to balance fatherhood with work and why fathers don't get any respect. We're going to break it down with him as well. Also, the Bala Brothers trio is gearing up to wow audiences in the United States. You'll see them here first. And the Piney Woods Boarding School is going strong after 104 years. The president is here to announce a new musical fundraising campaign. 26 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, welcome back to News One Now. You know what? Let me go ahead and say this here. Lots of cable news shows out there, they going nuts. Oh, my God, going crazy. Tom Brady, he got suspended for 4 games. Y'all, I don't really give a damn. I'm just saying, if you really think about it, out of all the stuff we could talk about, all the issues out there, Tom Brady and some air out of some footballs, okay, knock yourself out. He gone 4 games. We done. All right, folks, Josh Levs has been fighting for a father since he fought for and won his own battle for paternity leave. He has since uncovered some surprising stats about modern-day fathers, and we're going to break it down with him. And, you know, this is an important issue. I actually, Josh interviewed me for the book as well, and I wrote a blurb in his book. The book is called All In: How Our Work First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together. He joins us live via Skype from our Skype studio in Atlanta. Josh, good to see you.
Hey, Roland, thank you. And thanks for the blurb. And yeah, we got you right here on the back cover. You're in good company, too. We've got Maria Shriver and Bob Saget and you.
Cool.
So right where you belong.
All right, then. Let's get right to it. I often talk about fathers, the importance of dads, why they matter, and how important they are. And it's very interesting where I believe in this society, our society has said, daddy, you optional.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. And actually, that way of thinking is hurting women as much as it's hurting men. And this is something that's so important to understand. When you look at the structures that we have, and this is what I was up against, and this is what I read about in the book, when you look at the structures we have, being the only country with a developed economy that does not have paid maternity leave, making paternity leave so difficult to get for so many people in this country, it's all based on this assumption that the woman's going to do the parenting, that the woman's going to stay at home. And if there is a man, he's going to be the one that's focused on bringing home the bacon, and that's going to be his role. And that's not the reality anymore. You know, you were talking about surprising statistics. When you look at what's really going on in our families, we're doing a lot better than that. Dads who live with their kids are really involved. They're spending an average of 3 hours a day with them. And, Roland, I got to tell you, Black dads, in this respect, are doing the best of all dads in America. When you look at the statistics, Black dads who live with their kids are reading to them the most, bathing them, dressing them, taking really good care of them. And yet we do have this overall perception that dads are optional or dads are not relevant. And that's really bad for all of us, especially for kids.
This thing started with your lawsuit. So just tell folks who don't know about it what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was this really weird situation. I had been covering fatherhood for years as a columnist and on air at CNN, and then all of a sudden I found myself the subject of the news because there was this crazy policy where anyone who had a kid to take care of could get 10 paid weeks to stay home and take care of the kids unless you are a man who impregnated the mother of that child. So if you are the man and you did it the old-fashioned way, then you cannot get that same time to take stay home and take care of your kids.
So for you, Josh, your whole point was, look, all right, my baby is just born. The mother is taking time off. I should be able to take time off as a man to help raise my child, this newborn child.
Yeah, exactly, Roland. We are never going to get to a position of equality in America until we start to accept that it's just as legitimate for a man to take care of the kids as it is for a woman to take care of the kids. It's like, you know, I grew up on Free to Be You and Me and this whole idea of gender equality, but our laws and our workplace policies and our stigmas never did grow up. They're straight out of the 1950s, out of this ancient concept about what men and women are supposed to be doing. So I was the only kind of parent who couldn't get that benefit. It was ridiculous, and we won. A year later, Time Warner did change the policy, made it much, much better.
Well, and again, this thing, and here's the other thing, okay? Yeah. I'm telling you, you got some women who are saying, oh, you know, what is this guy talking about? What's the whole big deal? But when you start, let's talk about it when you go to family court and you're now fighting for visitation. The court assumes the woman is the better parent. Yeah. The court assumes that she should, the court assumes that the man has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he is just so much better than her. And I've heard from fathers who are saying, wait a minute, we know for a fact she is horrible, but the court system simply believes, without a doubt, without any questions being asked, the woman always better off taking care of the kid than a father.
Yeah, and that's a real problem. You know, courts are not supposed to do that anymore. They are under strict guidance that they are supposed to be gender neutral, but they're not. There are so many cases in which judges are part of that old school and still assume that the woman is going to be more of a natural parent or just the better parent. And let me tell you something. You said, you know, some women are going to hear this and say, what is he talking about? Well, women are being hurt by this prejudice the same way that men are. What's happening is, look, why don't we have enough women in C-suites? Only 4.6% of CEOs in the S&P 500 are women. Why don't we have enough women in Congress? Well, we are holding back our nation from reaching equality because we have these assumptions. So these policies right now push women to stay home, push men to stay at work, and make it so much harder for there to actually be the kind of equality that we all believe in. So, you know, women and men, the reason the book is called All In is that women and men, all those of us who really want equality, we stand together on this, and we can achieve this together.
Well, and I think one of the things that also jumps out, Josh, in this is where you have, I mean, it exists. You have men out there who are having discussions with their wives who are saying, okay, for the benefit of our child, if you're the one who's making more money and your career is going up, you know what? I'll go ahead and be a stay-at-home dad. And I think that this also is critically important because it deals with this perception of, oh, you're a weak wuss man if you're not working. When, no, as a man, you're saying, I am just as important to my child's life as the mother is.
That's right. Look, if you are a dad, being a committed father is the manliest thing you will ever do. And everyone needs to understand that. And we need to get past these perceptions that the role of a man is to make the money. Because look, as a father who has a daughter and sons, I want my kids to grow up with equal opportunities to do either. And we will only get there when we get past those stigmas. And also, those stigmas are really important for reaching out to the men who are being absentee dads. There is still a crisis. There is a fatherlessness crisis, and it is especially prominent in the Black community. You know, it's interesting. What I found when I really dug into the numbers here, most Black dads live with their kids, and they get a bad rap, but most Black dads live with their kids and are very involved. But most Black kids don't live with their dads. And that's, I explain in the book, but basically you have all these serial impregnators out there who are off having all these children. And I have a chapter by a man who was a serial impregnator, who was an absentee dad. He went around having all these kids by different women. And then finally, he reformed and has built relationships with these kids, two of whom have gone into the NFL. And so he has ideas, and other people have ideas as well, that if we can get that same message to them, Roland, if we can help them all understand the manliest thing you will achieve in your life is being a great dad, then earlier on, that is a big key toward getting them to not be absentee, to not run away from that responsibility, to be a part of it. Plus, let me tell you, everybody, you, and right there in the book, you have really good ideas
where
you say what should happen in churches when they should bring in the dads and say, hey, where's the dads? Let's go find them.
The book is called All In, How Our Work First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together, Josh Lales. Josh, I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
Hey, I just tweeted you. Thanks a lot, Roland.
Thanks a bunch. Folks, coming up, the South African singing group trio, the Bala Brothers, joins us next. And also, the Piney Woods Boarding School president, Will Crossley, talks about a musical fundraising campaign. 14 before the top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
That is a South African trio group, the Bala Brothers. They, of course, rose out of poverty during apartheid and broke the color barrier to become the first black members of the famous Drakensberg Boys Choir. Philo Zawai and Loaso join us on Skype from New York to discuss the first U.S. ever tour. Gentlemen, how y'all doing?
We good.
All right, so now y'all traveling all around the United States, first time here, so looking forward to it?
Yes,
absolutely. We're actually just kind of here now for just a week to obviously, you know, come and do an interview just especially for you.
Well, I appreciate
then,
it.
And it's obviously planned the tour, which is going to be in November, so later this year.
So let's talk about the importance of music, the role that it played during the anti-apartheid movement.
The apartheid really had a... You know, it brought about a lot of struggles for us. I think one of the things that you really take out of growing up in that situation was really just just our humility and just saying to ourselves that the sky is the limit, you know. And of course, having figures such as Nelson Mandela and other figures that have made it through it all, you know, and let us know that, you know, the dream is big. Let's just keep dreaming. We can conquer anything, you know.
Well, and I think that what people don't understand is just like the Civil Rights Movement and the Freedom Singers, the music was a unifying aspect for so many different people. And I think that's what's so great about music, and no matter what your background is, it is able to bring folks together on a common goal.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. You know, the best thing is if you want to spread a message, just spread it in a song. Like for instance, I'm not great at remembering poems, but I'll remember a song that's even 2 hours long. It's also the best way, I guess, you know, to get people to say the same thing. So music was really just sort of important, you know, for our liberation and in order to spread our message, just kind of like throughout the world. But obviously, there was a different message then than the one that we are coming to spread now, you know, like which is one that says that we are liberated, and although we still have many things out there that still need a lot of attention, but you know, Bala Brothers are there to bring a good story, you know, to people.
And you're gonna be traveling across the country, and so what is it that you want folks to get out of your concert? Because you know, some folks is high energy, other folks is pretty much mellow, if you will. What do y'all bring to the table?
I think Bala Brothers came to us. We got to do Bala Brothers by the time we had really done a lot of things. Back home, we've done local, what you can call hip-hop stroke dance. Loiso does R&B and so does Pelo. It does a lot of gospel. So I think by the time we did Bala Brothers, we had all that behind us, plus classical vocal training. So we basically just brought it together. And I think what you have on a Bala Brothers performance is you have light opera, so to speak, like your Il Divo, you know, Nella Fantasia and that kind of stuff. And you may not necessarily be into that, but you really get to enjoy the whole show because we break it down to light African, to a bit of R&B, to our own compositions and big songs like Circle of Life. So it's really a good program that is entertaining and takes you through, you know, light and shade.
Well, folks, y'all can get the DVD. They shot it on DVD and Blu-ray, a concert that was shot in Johannesburg, the historic Lyric Theater also, of course, their CD as well. You can go to the website for details about the tour. You definitely want to check it out. Gentlemen, I certainly appreciate you joining with us. And also, that's a nice pocket square you're rocking there. So we believe having a little festive pocket squares on my show. Thank you so very much, Bala Brothers. Y'all enjoy the tour.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, folks. Back in a moment on News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Black boarding schools in America, located in Mississippi, was founded by Dr. Lawrence C. Jones. He started the school in 1909, and the school is still educating students today. And his granddaughter, Kathy Hughes, of course, the founder of Radio One. The current president of Piney Woods is Will Crossley, who joins us right now to talk about the Piney Woods Give With Your Heart fundraising challenge and concert. Will, glad to have you on the show. So let's talk. So what is this event, the fundraising that you're doing?
Absolutely. And so I like to think of it as three parts. We're asking folks to contribute, to challenge, and then to celebrate. And so we're asking everybody to go online and contribute to the education of our kids. Dr. Jones, Kathy Hughes' grandfather, did that 60 years ago, went on and asked everybody to give a dollar. They did it, and it's allowed us to continue. And then we're asking people not only to contribute, but to also challenge. And so call everybody you know and tell them, let's get together and let's support the Piney Woods School. And then that's all going to culminate with a gospel concert on June 6th in Jackson. We're going to have the legendary Williams Brothers, the Canton Spirituals, and other major artists there to join us. And so we're asking everybody to join in and help us so that we can help students get an education.
How many students do you serve?
This year we had about 130 students, and so we are accepting applications now, and certainly looking to grow. I want to serve as many students as we can handle.
So you serve as men and women.
Exactly, we're co-educational.
And who bears the cost of educating the kids? Is it the parents or is it scholarships? How is that?
All of our students receive scholarship support, and so they are donors who contribute to the support of our children. But we also don't believe in free rides, and so we ask every parent to contribute given their own means. And so the amount of scholarship support that a student receives depends on the parental income that the parents have.
And obviously for a lot of folks that we talk about, there are very few Black boarding schools. I mean, this is, so for folks who don't know, this is literally where folks are sending their kids. They're living there. They're there. Now, are they there 9 months out of the year or is it year round?
That's right. We're there 9 months. And so kids do go home for the summer, and obviously we have holidays and so forth. And so it's not as if folks don't get to see their kids. And of course, parents are welcome to come and see us. But we have students from all over this country. This year we've had 22 states represented, and over the last few years, over four foreign countries. And so students from literally all over the country and all over the world coming in search of education.
So if folks want more details on the concert, but also on the school and its history, where do they go?
Absolutely. We'd like everybody to go to our website, www.pineywoods.org, www.pineywoods.org. They can call us at 601-845-2214.
Okay. All right. We sure appreciate it, Will. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right, folks. Tomorrow on News One Now, from the segregated South to the U.S. Secretary of Health, Dr. Louis Sullivan chronicles his amazing life in a new autobiography, which is also an NAACP Image Award winner. Plus, our comedians get crazy on Wildin' Out Wednesday, and so we have all of that happening on the show. And again, we're looking forward to Dr. Sullivan being on the show talking about his new book. Don't forget, Josh Lev's book, which I contributed to. The book is called All In, How Our Workforce Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together. Dads are important. And I know we always use that Mother's Day, but when we ignore the contribution of fathers, then we are making a huge mistake in this country. Folks, be sure to have a great day. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.